You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
As mentioned, our shapeshifter this evening is the Chief Director of Financial Accounting and Supply Chain Management at the National Department of Transport, Sithoko Zisiwe Kunene. And I never really get so blessed to have people in studio with me at this time. My colleague Kunai always says that I'm the ghost, you know, because I'm always here alone most of the time. So Naye, you can eat humble pie today because I've got my guest live in studio, and you can join us +27734703520. Good evening, ma'am.
Good evening.
How are you?
I am well. Thank you for having me today.
Thank you so much for gracing us with your presence. Really appreciate it. And gracing us in studio. That's
in studio.
Big. Yeah. Now I've got my cameras here. They should be just taking photos and everything.
Yeah.
So really appreciate your time. How was your day?
The day was shorter than normal.
Oh, okay.
I do work for the public sector. We did have a half day today for Easter.
Okay.
Although I did stay longer than usual, I am dedicated.
I can see. There's always those that are dedicated.
More dedicated than others. Yeah.
Okay. Yes. But so you're out for the Easter holidays as well?
We're out for the Easter holidays. Okay. On my side. It's the end of the financial year, so it was a big day for me.
Sure.
Because that just signifies an end.
Yeah.
And due to the work that I do,
end
of the financial year is a big event.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be followed by something even bigger.
Ooh.
So, in fact, I can basically say it's about to get real.
Oh, wow. Is this forward. Every year it gets real
every
around
year.
This time?
Gets real
is that
around
like
this
audits
time.
Or something?
Audits, financial statements, all of those. So,
Is it the AG?
Yes, definitely.
No one likes auditors.
Yeah,
eh?
We don't really like
these guys. Okay, that's really, I mean, but I suppose the next few days is really for you to just relax and get ready for this
what
big thing that's coming up. That is.
Yeah.
But thank you so much for coming. Really appreciate your time. Let's start here. Tell us a little bit about yourself, particularly where did you grow up, and maybe what were the challenges that you faced growing up?
Background about myself.
Yeah.
Okay. I suppose I've only lived 45 years in this life.
45 years
only.
Young.
Yeah, 45 years young.
Yeah.
I think I consider myself to be an interesting case.
Okay.
Having been born in Eswatini, although my birth certificate says Mahlabatini.
Oh, okay.
Of course, I had to have that birth certificate done this side.
Yeah.
But I've grown up in so many different places.
Okay.
For an example, if I tell people that as much as they know me to be from KZN, I actually started my schooling here in Pimville. I went to Winningberg as a primary school, yes.
Oh, that's interesting.
And then I moved back to Ulundi.
Okay.
Did primary schooling there as well. Then moved to Umlazi. Eventually moved to Pietermaritzburg.
Mm.
So I would say I've lived in quite a few places.
Mm.
I actually never went to a school for more than 2 years.
Really?
So I went to 7 different schools by the time I finished high school.
And that wasn't disruptive?
Basically, when you're asking me about the challenges I faced growing up, I do consider myself as one of the privileged people. I guess we'll get into that a little bit later, because I don't remember that much of challenges.
Okay.
And that is why I've always tried to sort of pull back a lot of the times, because people my age don't necessarily have such a story to tell.
Yeah.
Basically, I would say my biggest challenge was that, the constant moving around.
Yeah.
At the time, I thought it was a challenge.
Yeah.
Later on, it became social capital,
ah,
where people would be like, if you're in Cape Town, you tend to know someone. Or yeah. if you're here, you tend to know yeah. someone. So that constant moving around manifested into social capital much later in life. But that was a challenge for me, having to make new friends yes, every time.
Yes.
Of course, there were other challenges per se, but I just... especially from a person born in the 70s, growing up in the 80s and 90s, you'd expect a big story like, oh, I was walking to school barefoot.
Yeah,
I was very fortunate to experience that. But life brought some of those people near me later in life where I got to understand what life was really like for other people. So as much as I grew up in townships, somehow I was very protected.
You're cushioned.
Yeah, so I don't have some of the experiences some of the people had, even though I grew up in Mlazi, you know.
Yeah.
So growing up in Soweto as well, living with my grandfather. Yeah. My grandfather was a pastor in the Seventh-day Adventist Church, so he moved around a lot.
Yeah.
That also was quite an interesting background for me. So as a result, I would say, I've had an interesting life. Not that many challenges, I would say. I would say they were more superficial more than anything.
Yeah.
You know, never having really experienced poverty and only have experienced it through hearsay. So basically, and that is why sometimes, you know, you feel like you're not qualified. To tell some of the stories because you feel a bit privileged.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm pretty sure I did have some sort of challenges here and there. It's just that I think my mind is more focused on how I was fortunate in life.
Yeah. Oh, really? So PKs are cushioned. They live nice lives, eh?
Well, I'm not sure they would say that, but as a grandchild, I really enjoyed myself.
Someone saying
I'm
that,
still reaping the benefits to this day. Yeah.
Someone was saying that Mina was waiting for her to say she was selling a grain of rice for school fees.
No,
it's not you. No. You are not that type of.
No. So you know, sometimes you feel like, ooh, I'm under pressure.
Yeah.
What are the big things that I'll say I've experienced? I remember asking my mom once, "Mom, were we ever poor?"
Yeah.
And she always found it interesting. Apparently, I tend to want to ask that a lot because, you know, it's like when other people are telling stories, what's going to be your story?
Your story, yeah.
And then I was like, you know what? Embrace.
But that seems like a DSTV problem. You've got nice life problem because you are thinking about what stories you will tell when other people tell a story. And other people, I think, where's my next meal?
Yes, exactly. Which is, so basically you got to understand that as you're growing up and actually appreciate and really appreciate the privilege that you grew up in without realizing that you were going through privilege. Of course, you'll see things, but it would not necessarily touch you specifically. And I think as well as growing up in a tight-knit family, I was very fortunate that both my mother and my father come from very tight-knit families on all sides. So I think the cushion was made even more by all of that.
Yeah.
The people that surrounded me. So basically,
So what's privilege like? I mean, I think maybe we, like you correctly said, we try and run away from saying I'm privileged. And at some point, we need to embrace it. So I suppose where I'm trying to go is, at what age did you start realizing I'm actually privileged?
I actually didn't. You know, you think you have problems until you're an adult.
Yeah.
And you start counting back.
Yeah.
You know, when I tell people that I've never even had a fight in school. I've never experienced a simple thing as that. So you then start wondering, did I even grow up in South Africa or what? So what I can say it's like is when you're experiencing it, you don't necessarily think you're experiencing it until you're hearing the story of the next person. And then you realize You know, you must thank God. And sometimes I run away from saying that because it's like I'm saying God was not with the other people whilst I was enjoying the privilege. But basically, I've come to realize that maybe some people might find that if you were my friend, you might remember some things. But from my perspective, that's how I see it. Because I'm comparing it to really difficult stories that exist out there. So when you are living it, you don't realize
you don't realize you're living it.
You're actually thinking the same.
It's normal. That's normal. What is happening.
Yeah.
I think that's an interesting perspective, really, because and that's what I'm saying. I think we need to embrace. If you're privileged, you're privileged. There's literally nothing wrong with being blessed like that, right? It doesn't necessarily need to be juxtaposed to a person and say, "Yeah, I grew up very poor and I had to fight my way through life." Yes, that was your portion. Exactly.
Yeah.
And all that sort of stuff. So so that's an interesting perspective. And how has that shaped who you are today?
That is why I often said it was easier for me to concentrate on my goals, what I wanted to do next, without having to worry about what the next person had to worry about. And this became more apparent to me when I was at Technikon Natal. And then I started having lots of friends. And I started realizing that, oh, it's not just a decision to say, oh, I'm going to university and my parents are going to pay. And it's just a done deal and it's easy as that. Basically, I suppose... for me, that's that.
Yeah. Someone saying soft life comes in many shapes and forms.
Yes, it does.
So there you go.
Yeah.
It comes in different shapes and forms. Eh? So that's really amazing. Now let's talk about then your schooling. Private school, public school, what was it like?
Public school.
Okay.
All the way through.
Yeah.
No private schooling at all. And you know, having somehow my parents just knew how to pick the best schools
in
the township.
Ooh,
so
nice.
As much as you would be schooling in the township, you would be... I remember a primary school I went to around very difficult times in the 80s.
Yeah.
That was so strict.
Yeah.
I remember there was this issue where they were trying to force all the schools to wear black and white uniform.
Yeah,
and the principal of the school was like, not my school. And I just had to be in that particular school. So you were always sort of living in panic as to will you be attacked because you're not wearing black and white.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you now, it was in the 80s, but that school had a library. And that school had speech and drama. Some of the things you recognize later in life. So I thought having a library in school was the most normal thing.
Yeah.
Here I was in a township school that had a library.
Yeah.
And for me, that is why I then thought it was normal. It was not just my school. Yeah. So as a result, I felt like as much as I was in public schooling, I was in some of the best public schoolings. All seven of them.
Sure. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Linda says, it's quite refreshing to hear this, actually. We are used to group work poverty, where all of us must just compare our poor stories and compete for the poorest of the poor. So that's an interesting one. And she says, and privilege doesn't follow a script, Yazi. I believe you could be from a poor family and go through a Model C school all the way through high school. If they sacrificed and got you that, your education was privileged, and that's fine. And it doesn't have to be common with a Gucci bags. And I think I concur with Linda.
I think I concur with her as well.
If you're privileged, that's fine. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. Now, let's talk about school then. What did you want to be when you were still young?
I think I've always looked up to my uncle. So I had an uncle who was only 6 years older than me. So we were on a first name basis.
I think that's one of the weirdest things. I always find someone is a grandmother and you're like, I'm 20, but I'm a grandmother. Hey, this is weird. Yeah.
So I think I've always looked up to him. Well, he's late now.
Yeah.
So I think with everything that he was. Mm. That's what I wanted to be. Mm. So when he became, he went to do accounting. Yeah. I wanted to do accounting. Yeah. When he became an accountant, I wanted to be an accountant. So for me, even choosing the subjects that I wanted to do, they were inspired by him mostly.
Yeah.
And those who know him, some know him, would know that we were very close.
Mm.
And I think I just got inspired by his way of doing things.
Mm.
He was a bit of a free-spirited guy.
Mm.
So I didn't know whether that came from being an accountant, but from what I had heard, accountants were stingy. But my uncle was very generous. So for on my side, I think most of my inspiration came from him.
Yeah.
As much as we had a very short, a small gap between us age-wise. So I grew up looking after him.
Yeah.
And I would really credit him for a lot of the things I wanted to be.
Mm.
Of course, I had all other role models. And they also played quite a big role in my decisions on what I wanted to be. But initially, I actually wanted to do engineering.
Okay.
Because I went to a school where you had to do maybe 13 subjects.
Yeah, yeah.
So I did technical drawing.
Yo.
You did typing at the same time.
Did you do home economics?
You did all of it. That's the one subject they didn't have.
Oh, okay, okay.
But I was so good with technical drawing.
Okay.
I thought maybe I should do this engineering thing. But when I had to choose to say it's commerce or that, and I couldn't mix it up.
Yes, yes.
Obviously, I went for accounting because my uncle.
Yeah. Fantastic. That's really lovely.
Yeah.
And besides him, was there anything you knew about what being an accountant actually entailed?
I think I spent most of my time in the library, be it the school. It would eventually bore me.
Mm.
I'd go to the one in town.
Yeah.
I'd remember because I took a bus, especially from Umlazi to my school. I went to a school in Umbilo. And on a Friday, I would then decide to go the opposite direction to town to go to the library. So I was constantly reading and understanding what's going on, researching, reading a lot of books, returning them the next Friday, taking more, getting there. There's newspapers.
Yeah.
So I think I had researched what I wanted to do quite well.
Okay.
And even the spirit of being able to do that comes mainly from my background as well.
Yeah.
And just being given an opportunity to be able to research, explore.
Yeah.
My parents are very contemporary.
Yeah.
So they were the type to, when other people would think it's a taboo thing to just, you know, let a child be.
Yeah, yeah.
I was given a lot of choices.
Yeah.
So even when I had to choose a high school,
yeah.
my parents just let me decide which
one.
Each time I needed to move.
Yeah.
And as a result, because I had that spirit of being able to make choices from a young age, I was able to know I have to decide the next level and decide the next level.
Yeah.
So I knew it was upon me.
Yeah.
And then I would do a lot of research so that when they were asking me, okay, so what's next?
Yeah.
Then I would do that. And no one had to push me per se. It's like when I had to apply, no one was like, have you applied? Have you applied? I've applied to like 10 places.
Yeah.
So I've always been a determined person from a young age, I would say.
Oh, that's fantastic. And did you find when you're doing the course, accounting easier?
Not necessarily.
Yeah.
And I remember because now my uncle was living in Springs.
Yeah.
He would need to drive or take a bus.
Yeah.
Just to come sometimes and tutor me.
Yeah.
And then drive back or take a bus back.
What a privilege. You've never had a tutor. It was
so
vibes.
He had to do a lot of that.
Yeah.
So I didn't necessarily find it easy. I suppose I realized later that I find economics more easy than accounting per se.
Yeah.
But I suppose we all have that subject. Some people will be into tax.
Yes.
Some people will be into...
Yeah.
So I found tax much easier than accounting. But I really, really, for some reason, had read there isn't enough accountants or there isn't enough black accountants, you know, reading all of those. And you're like, okay, I just want to move into that space because it's not saturated well at the time.
Oh, that's really interesting. First job, do you remember it?
I remember my first job. First job to a certain extent, as in a serious first job or casual job?
Whatever you define as first job.
So my friends and I used to look for jobs. So we would go looking for stock-taking jobs at game. And we would be paid same day. And we'd be able to take that money and buy ourselves whatever we want.
So you didn't have the pressure of contributing to home?
I never had the pressure of contributing to home.
you lived a nice life, Shem, I must say.
So that working and always constantly, I think that's why I know people warn you against friends. But I would say mine really sort of pushed me because they had a push. Their backgrounds really needed them to push. And because they were on a push, I was in that grouping where it gave me that encouragement to also push just like they were pushing. And what I can tell you now is out of the entire grouping, the entire group is doing very well because I can tell we started very early to take this thing seriously. But I would say my first real job was when I was appointed by a consulting firm.
Okay.
So I didn't just start in government. And actually am thankful for that because when you start in the private sector and then move to government, your work ethic is a bit different because you've started in a different space. And I was in what they call an assistant accountant, but we did most of the consulting work. So that was my first real job before I then moved to government. When I moved to government, that's where a whole span of career then started moving.
And in that span, at what stage or at what point did you characterize as your highest point?
So I've worked in about, I think this is my fourth department. I started at Office of the Premier in KZN, moved to KZN Provincial Treasury, moved to KZN Department of Transport. Now I'm at National Transport. So I would suppose from Office of the Premier, that's where I started my management experience. But when I moved to KZN Department of Transport, that's when I was in a senior management. And that is where I would say I've learned the most. Not only about the work itself, but about myself, about how to navigate leadership. Because I would say the highest of the highs were there, as well as the lowest of the lows. And not to maybe mention them in a negative way. When you are in finance, there's a lot of sleepless nights. And I did most of those there. You would cross nights quite a lot trying to catch deadlines. The highest of the high was there when I got an opportunity to serve as an acting CFO for about a year. I actually credited to especially learning a lot about soft skills because there isn't much you can learn that is new about the job itself. But in terms of soft skills and leadership, that is where I then learned even more. But it's the one space that allowed me to grow, really grow within the job. And it's easy to be a specialist when you're in government. When I say specialist, I mean you are just in, because as you heard, I'm a chief director in financial accounting, supply chain management. Those are two different jobs altogether. And to be able to do both of them means you would have dabbled into quite a lot in your experience. And because I had gotten an opportunity to really be involved in almost everything, that is why I'm able to be here today, being able to navigate different areas within finance. So I would say that's where the highs were really high. Also, the pressure also was even higher. So also the lows were really lows. Just it becomes difficult. Your family hardly sees you. So that becomes the worst of them all. Because you're constantly in work mode. Even on holiday, you have your laptop. So I think those were the days that were the most difficult. Even though they brought me to where I am today. But also that is where you actually try and learn. Even though I still think, I'm not sure if there's such a thing called work-life balance, but you sort of learn how to navigate it to a certain extent.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. So what are some of the, maybe one or two lessons that you look back at and like, I've learned something or two. And maybe some of them come through experience when you're thrown into the deep end, so you've got to manage these things, bring these two things together. There could be lessons in there maybe that you didn't anticipate, all those sort of stuff.
So in the space, there's quite a lot, I must say. You learn to navigate. Because, you know, when you're an accountant, you're just a normal worker. But you get to leadership. You start needing to go to certain meetings. You start needing to understand how to navigate certain oversight committees, some political at that. And you start learning and understanding quite a number of things. But I think the biggest challenge was when you are in Maritzburg. And something that's happening in Vryheid is your problem. And it's a bit difficult, as much as you would like not to micromanage. It becomes, you know, at the end of the day, you are the responsible person who has to account at the end of the day. So you have to learn. I think that is why I said the soft skills were more honed during those days, because that's when you realize that you need to rely on people. Because if you're an accountant, you can easily go into your own little corner and just do your work and do your debits and credits. But when you start being in leadership positions and you realize you have to let go, you have to delegate, and you have to trust the next person. I would say the other is maintaining your integrity. You know, in the job that I do, my integrity is my goodwill. It's my it's my
you can
currency.
Quantify it.
So basically you need to manage that and in isiZulu sithi ubambe njengekhali zamantungo, so that nobody messes with that, because without that, in the space that I'm in, you really need that more than anything. And you know, when you're in government and the perception that's out there about public servants. And besides the fact that I'm a Christian, but you also have to navigate and hold on to that. So that when people hear your name, they only associate it with good. So balancing that as well, as well, is not really a difficult task. It's just that you have to manage it very well.
Someone is asking, what is the one thing that she wants us to know about public servants, given the kind of reputation they have?
Yes, you know, at some point someone said to me, are you sure you work for the government? Because what people know is that public servants don't work.
The system is always offline.
That's what they know. So when I'm constantly in work mode, I have my laptop everywhere. I remember we once went on holiday with my husband. I was so constantly worried about work. We had to even deactivate my emails. And we were like seriously away. What I'd like people to know about public servants is that maybe because when you're in finance, you do not have the privilege of not working.
Of offline systems.
The space just doesn't allow it. I know, though, that if you are in charge, like me, of processing payments, you'll hear of stories of maybe someone wants to be bribed in order to do their work. I suppose there's nothing really you can do. And that is why I was actually saying to someone suggesting that public service really needs to be professionalized to a certain extent. Yeah. Because for a very long time, you get people who were not raised well. I can't suddenly make you an ethical person moment you step into the position. So we try by all means to set controls to avoid situations. But there are some very good public servants out there, very dedicated. Yeah. The people I work with, people I've worked with, have always been motivated. At first, I wasn't sure whether it's because I was working for small departments like Office of the Premier or Treasury, where it's expected that people will uphold the highest level of ethics. But I find that those who would go out of their way to do it, that's just who they are. And that is why I was perhaps thinking, really, things like ethics, integrity, maybe those things really must be taught in school, like as a subject. I know the responsibility is on your parents to teach you the right thing, but maybe that can be done as well. Because really, it's very difficult to get a person to suddenly be a good citizen because they are joining the public service. But I can tell you now, there's a lot of very good public servants. I know when you are working a public desk, it might not appear so, but from behind the scenes, you'll find a whole lot of us that are very dedicated and want the best for the public as well. There's plenty of us. In fact, there's more of us than not. But I cannot say that their observations are not correct. It's their lived experiences as well. They've seen it for too long. They've experienced it. Even I've experienced it as a public servant myself. So I can't really say that's just an isolated case. It's there. There's a lot of work that still needs to be done. The government is trying. They're designing all sorts of things. But I really think if we all came with the right attitude ourselves, know that it's you, it starts with you, it might change people's lives. That is why I think public service should be professionalized.
Now, we're getting closer to our time, but I want to ask this particular question. And I think you're quite right. Maybe whoever is handling government's marketing needs to shine people like yourselves so that whatever narrative that's out there can be balanced with the fact that there are public servants. I mean, we hear it every day that there are good public servants, and some of us are bapi. where are they? We hear about them because we only hear quite a lot of the rot. And maybe it also speaks to the media. I mean, I suppose good public servants don't really sell, right? They don't sell newspapers and all that. It's the bad ones that maybe do sell and all that. Do you think, and this is perhaps an unfair question, but I think I will ask it anyway.
Okay. Right?
My producer is listening. If I get into trouble, she'll be in trouble as well. Do you think we need to Christianize the public sector?
You know, believe it or not, the public sector is Christianized. Maybe, I'm not sure whether it is Christianized in KwaZulu-Natal, because as long as I was at all the departments, we would always start our main committee with prayer. I remember especially around, in fact, everywhere, including cabinet, they do. I'm not sure about national, but definitely in a provincial sense. So from where I was, I've only ever experienced it in a Christian format. Maybe it's because maybe I've just gotten to the national sphere, so I haven't really paid much attention. So I still feel it's pretty much Christianized. I remember just before the matric exams, the MEC for Education in KZN issued a request for all Christians to place our learners in prayer, have special prayers. And I think we still sort of believe in that, although some people complain about it, but I've only ever experienced it from a Christian perspective. I haven't really experienced it differently. Some people might differ in their opinion, but that's the only way I've ever experienced it.
Okay.
Sometimes you would go on Twitter and people would even make jokes about it to say, instead of doing something, you're busy praying. I remember there was a big prayer being held last year and people felt like prayer was not going to sort it. Work needed to be done instead of praying.
Yeah.
So really from where I'm sitting, I really think it's quite Christianized. Yes.
Okay. Again, another unfair question and for very selfish reasons, I must be honest with you.
Etol.
I mean, you can choose not to answer, but your views there.
My views about Etol.
I mean, you're at National Transport. We need to ask you.
Funny you should say that about Etols. I remember my old boss, I won't say who, when we were driving here.
Yeah.
And my boss is like, What's wrong with people of Gauteng? You want to drive in these nice roads for free? We are quite told in KZN.
Okay.
And maybe to try and explain, I think it would be a bit difficult to explain how the concept of revenue works.
Yeah.
But you have to sort of fill the gap of how you're going to finance not tolling your Gauteng freeway. As a result, that is why I think there's been this big delay in trying to decide whether to scrap them or not to be scrapped. I still feel somehow there needs to be a solution. I'm not sure what it is because also tolling the road with so much traffic in Joburg and in Pretoria, it might be a difficult thing to do.
Yeah.
So from my perspective, I think that's what they thought when they decided on Etols to say, let's give people free movement to be able to move pretty quickly as opposed to us. If I'm going to Durban, I need to stop at Marian Hill and pay and then pass.
Yeah.
And imagine if we had to have such a toll gate somewhere in between what would happen. So basically from where I'm sitting, there needs to be revenue generated somehow.
Yeah.
It's not up to me to really decide how that's done. But basically that was the idea behind it, to say there needs to be free movement, but at the same time, the road has to be maintained somehow. Yeah.
Let me qualify why I was saying I'm asking for own selfish reasons from two fronts. One, when I did my honors, that was my research paper.
Oh, okay.
So I spoke with your Wayne Duvernage around such things.
What were your recommendations?
I won't say. and number two, I'm an economist and a classical one.
Yeah.
So I believe in the user pay principle.
Yeah.
My colleague Zama doesn't agree with me on such things. But I believe you need to pay. I think, and thirdly, by the way, I had the privilege of working at the COC.
Okay.
Here in Samrand.
Yes.
So I had the privilege of seeing those big screens where they monitor all these accidents and all. And I can tell you, world class systems that are sitting in that building, which is becoming a white elephant, which really is sad.
Sad. Yeah.
Yeah. But world class screens that are sitting there monitoring traffic, and I remember we used to, I think it was Nazir at the time, speaking about how we, you know, free flowing traffic actually is good for the economy of Gauteng, and it is good, right? Because you don't want congestion, goods get delivered later, and it causes all sorts of pandemonium in the economy and all that. And for some of us who might not appreciate those classical principles of economics, might not see what we're doing.
Yes,
I think where the problem is, this is my view, because I have the right for my view, so I can say this. My view is that I think they were highly priced.
Okay.
I think the model around the pricing was perhaps not done really well. And so for people who could do basic mathematics and people who are into numbers like you and I would calculate the distance if you stay in Pretoria and work in Joburg. At the time when they were introduced, it was like $1,000 more.
Mm.
And no one gets, unless you're at a senior level, R1,000 in an increase.
Yes.
So imagine after you have to now pay R1,000 more every month for something that you didn't really expect.
Yes.
But these were three-way routes, now five, you know, so there's lots more traffic flowing and all those stuff. So I believe we should have prayed. But I think if it was like 2 cents, 3 cents, we could
2 cents, 3 cents.
But not, there's 10 of them just on the N1 going to Joburg, and all of them are like five rand. The cost start going up and all those sort of stuff. Zama saying, quote me correctly when. Great interview, no, by the way,
so
with this talk.
I won't have
a view on that.
Yes. Because I need to be very careful.
That's what I'm saying. Yes. I ask for selfish reasons because
yes,
for as well.
Yes,
but yeah.
Yes. So yeah, but I hear what you're saying. So that is why I was giving an opinion from a person who lived in KZN.
Yeah.
And was visiting Joburg.
Yeah.
When I was like, look at this world class infrastructure.
World class.
Yeah. So and also to also ease up on issues of borrowing, because the more we do not have enough revenue, we then start to borrow more, and you already know the state we are in terms of our debt ratio at the moment. So all of those, I suppose a lot needs to be considered. I mean, you and I are right now, I'm actually moving towards being an economist.
Yeah.
I'm trying to finalize my development finance
as
well.
That's nice.
We are.
Yeah.
So I know exactly what you are
actually
saying.
I must share notes because I'm also into going that route for my PhD in development
PhD.
Finance. So you and I must have a conversation.
Yeah. Which is one of the reasons why I'm only finishing it now.
Yeah,
I had to apply
see.
For an interruption of studies with Stellenbosch.
Yeah.
It was going really well until I had to act, which was a big responsibility. So they understood.
Yeah.
Now that the pressure is a little bit less, I'm just finishing it off as well. So I agree on the notes.
We've got 2 minutes. In 10 seconds or less, what is the relationship that you have with money? Toxic, good? We find we are comfortable.
The relationship I have with money is what? It's evolving.
It's evolving. That's very political. Yeah. That's a politically correct answer. It's evolving.
It's evolving.
Okay.
There's been, you know, I'm going to go back on privilege again.
Yeah.
I think for a person who had no student debt.
Yeah.
Who
Ooh,
didn't really start a life
with debt.
With debt.
Yeah.
I later picked on a lot through bad decisions, some good decisions. So as I've been growing up, that's why I'm saying it's evolving, because as much as mistakes been made, at the same time, I think I might have started my journey with a financial advisor earlier on in life.
Yeah.
So it's sort of a little bit balanced, and I'm on a quest to...
Okay.
Fix it
for
the better.
Nice.
I know people expect accountants to be these perfect
we
people.
Do.
We can be better. That's why I had to deactivate Instagram.
Oh, okay.
I was buying stuff I didn't need. I thought I needed it.
Yes.
So it's little things like those that you do not realize. And some jokes we would make to itself that
exactly.
So, you know, believing all of those things. But yeah, it's an evolving one for the better.
For the better
Let's
as well.
Put it that way.
Looking back at your younger self, what would be your advice to your younger self?
Okay. Advice to my younger self, I suppose most of it would be around issues of money.
Yeah.
And to make better decisions, to not even start debt at all.
Yeah.
And also another issue that I have a lot is I'm a worrier. I worry a lot. So, and now that I think about it, all the things that I was worried about, really, I'm like thinking, really? I think I would really try and counsel myself to really let things be or worry less.
Yeah.
That would actually be very great for me, because I spent a lot of my time worrying about tomorrow. Now that I'm in tomorrow, I'm thinking, what was I worried about?
Yeah.
So I would really, and then I would tell myself to, I think it's a very important one, this one for me, about my general wellness.
Yeah.
Give myself a lot of free time for soft life. Not necessarily.
Can you please repeat that?
Not necessarily concentrate so much on the work. Spent a lot of time working. It might have gotten me to where I was because I was known as a worker.
Yeah.
I was recommended as a hard worker.
Yeah.
So if you went to the next person, they'll really, I would come highly recommended.
Yeah.
But at a cost of my husband and kids, I don't think it eventually is worth it along the long run. But so I would ease up on that as well. Mm. Especially because I'm seven, I'll pay. Those are the things I would really counsel myself. Spend more time with your family.
Yeah.
It's the most important thing. Yeah. Your wellness, your mental health.
Mm.
Basically, prioritize that more than all the other things. Because work is a means to an end,
yes.
in the true sense.
Yeah.
Just have that mindset.
Yes. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Young people, what would be your message, particularly the girl child?
Particularly the girl child. You know, the girl child right now.
Mm.
I know. It's a bit of a controversial one at times to say. We've pioneered when introduction of women in management came through. I was just fortunate to have been in that space at the right time.
Mm.
So I would say, girl child, you know when they say own your power, the world is really your oyster. I know it's like a cliche kind of a thing to say, but I think a girl child right now has a whole lot more opportunities and they can really, really tap into them.
Mm.
If just with the right steering, and I'm not sure whether really it's on us as parents or on them to steer them into the right direction per se, but really, I don't know, maybe because as a girl child, I've always thought to myself, it's up to me, there's no man must.
Yes, daughter must.
it's me. I'm going to get myself the things I want. If you just tell yourself that.
Yeah.
Have the right attitude in life.
Yeah.
If you want to drive a Porsche, tell yourself, I'm going to buy myself a Porsche.
That's my favorite call.
And actually, like, just have that outlook about yourself and your life, and it happens.
Yeah,
and I think maybe because I've always told myself, you know, I would jokingly say I clock my goals at this time, and I would definitely clock it.
Yeah,
I'm not sure whether it comes from the fact that I come from a really praying background.
Yeah,
You really, if you believe in it, I'm telling you, it happens. God is there.
Yeah.
He will make it happen for you.
Thank you so much, ma'am.
Thank you.
Really, really appreciate your time this evening. And I have a feeling this is part one.
Okay.
You must come for part two. But may God continue to bless you. And we need, dedicated public servants like yourself. They give us hope that... Yeah, even though things might look the way they look somewhere, but we're going there. You're going in the right direction, and may God bless you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. Thank you so much. So there you go. What a beautiful conversation that we had there. And thank you so much also for joining us and talking to us. It's been a pleasure and a beautiful conversation indeed.
You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.